When it was over, the congregation filed out into the clean, pine-scented afternoon. Mildred decided that Doc was certainly not up to a wreck. He would be far better off spending the afternoon warm under a pile of blankets in their hut. She arranged for Sister Helen to look in on him and provide him with plenty of drinks of hot lemon and honey.
Dehydration. That's the biggest danger when you're running a temperature. I think it's some kind of Sierra influenza. You've got all the symptoms that I'd expect. Trembling and stiffness and soreness in the joints, feeling hot and cold at the same time, sweating.
Perspiring, madam, if you please. Horses sweat and men perspire.
While ladies merely glow. Sure, I knew that. Couple of days feeling like death and you should start getting better.
How about the testing? Doc will let us all down if he's sick.
Bilgewater.
They walked about a mile and a half from the center of Hopeville, happy to leave behind the oppressive, crazed fanaticism of the Children of the Rock. The weather was perfect, with just the faintest breeze from the north stirring the smaller branches of the great pines. After starting along the ribboned blacktop, Ryan led the companions toward the west, up a spur trail that showed only the hoofmarks of a herd of deer. He checked his miniature rat counter and saw that it had shifted imperceptibly from orangey red to a reddish orange.
Seems like the hot spot's in this direction.
They crossed a vivid strip of open meadow, surrounded by the towering black corpses of burned-out trees. The grass was lush, speckled with a variety of colorful plants. Christy identified the delicate orange of columbine and the flaming daggers of the Indian paintbrush. Mildred stopped, stretched her arms out wide, and smiled broadly for the sheer pleasure of being alive.
God's country. Air like this should be nectar for poor old Doc.
You worried about him?
Not exactly. Not yet, anyway. There's this bizarre temporal anomaly about how old he really is and how old he seems to be. Two totally different figures.
I always think of him as being old.
Understandable. Looks to be somewhere around the middle of his 70s.
80s on a bad day.
No, 90s on a real bad day. Don't forget, he's had all that time jumping to screw up his body and mind. How old is he again?
You mean you can't recite the whole story yet? Well, let me see if I can do Doc justice. Born Theophilus Algernon Tanner, South Stratford, Vermont, February 14th, in the year of our Lord, 1868. Married his beloved Emily in June of 1891. Children came along for them in 1893 and 1895.
Rachel and Julian.
Right. Then those sick whitecoat bastards time-trawled him forward to 1998, 102 years into his future.
Mildred nodded and took a drink from one of the water containers that they'd been given by Steele before they left.
Not surprising his brain's gotten scrambled.
Ryan checked his rad counter again.
According to this, we can't be that far from the source of the leak.
Is this a good idea, lover? I mean, will we be safe?
My reading's the same as Ryan's. Not really high enough to present us with a serious immediate health threat. It looks like a long-term, slow-leak hotspot.
There was a deadly serious Russian meltdown toward the end of the 20th century at a place called Chernobyl. The men exposed were only unprotected for a minute or so, trying to do some instant repair work. And they were nearly all dead within months. Weeks, some of them.
Everyone looked at Mildred, startled into silence by her information.
Is that so? Heard the name. Didn't know it was that ferocious.
There are different kinds of radiation sickness. Some's quick and some slow. Noticed quite a few of the men and women in the ville showed signs of slow hair loss, sores on their faces, especially around the mouth, bleeding gums, joint stiffness, and problems with mobility. And as we already know, there's sterility for men and for women. So, no kids in Hopeville.
Except for the ones they steal from the Apaches. Sounds like what we remember about Joshua Wolf. He could be treacherous. Still, I'm guessing he wouldn't have an urge to take Dean.
I'd shoot him, Dad. Already lost one parent, and I didn't like being away from you when I was at the Brody School.
No one will ever take you from me. You know that, son. And Wolf won't even have a chance. We aren't staying long enough to give him one. Just a couple of days or so. With Doc being ill, it's just better to keep to where he can be looked after.
Jack had wandered a little way ahead of where they'd all stopped. Now he returned, excited.
Think I found it.
It was a redoubt, much smaller than most of the other redoubts that they'd encountered. Any thoughts that it might have concealed a gateway were immediately dashed. There was every sign it was a place that had been hastily built in the last days before Skydark. The overgrown remains of a tarmac roundabout, edged with disintegrating concrete posts about 3 feet high, stood in long grass, reminding Ryan of the grave markers that he'd once seen, dotting the abandoned battlefield of the Little Bighorn. The entrance to the redoubt gaped open, one of the double sectors lying rusted in the dirt. The other hung by only one of the set of massive hinges. Even from 30 yards away, they could all smell the dank air. Christy closed her eyes in an expression of distaste.
I can almost feel the wickedness here. I know it's imagination, but I'd swear that I can actually see the radiation poisoning seeping out of the Black Cavern like a great slow cloud of evil.
Ryan left her, walking to stand in the cold shadows of the entrance. He peered into the blackness. JB joined him, taking off his glasses to polish them on his sleeve.
Dark night. Smell of death. Not sure there's much point in going on to wreck much farther. Reckon we've seen most of what we need to see. It's obvious the place was stripped when it was abandoned.
He replaced his glasses on his nose, and his eyes adjusted to the darkness. JB could see that the inside was bare and empty, glistening with a fluorescent green moss that seemed to cover all the walls and stone floor. Ryan pointed to a place higher up the side of the hill, where there had been a vast earth shift, probably dating from very early in the days after Skydark. Dead trees leaned sideways, their rotting roots exposed to the sunlight.
Quake probably broke it open inside, set the main nuke power source to leaking. If we went exploring, we'd probably find it cracked wide.
Jack, Dean, and Mildred joined them, leaving Christy standing alone in the bright sunshine. Ryan continued to stare up the hill, then turned to JB.
Shame, really. Look at that.
Yeah, it would have been real easy to do.
You two are like identical twins some of the time. Symbiosis. Knowing precisely what the other one's thinking even before you speak. It's kind of irritating to a mere outsider like me.
I was thinking how simple it would have been to have brought down the whole mountainside with a handful of plastics.
If they'd done it years ago, they'd have sealed off the rad leak.
Oh, I get it. And then none of them would have been sick. And they could have carried on breeding. How different life could have been for them.
No fighting Apaches.
A thriving community, instead of one hanging onto the edge of extinction by broken fingernails. Yeah, all too late now.
I really don't like this place, friends. Can we get away now?
As though nature were in agreement with Christie's uneasiness, a great bank of clouds came sweeping over the tops of the pines from the north, veiling the sunshine and bringing the threat of rain. The sky turned leaden, all trace of blue vanishing. The temperature fell by 20 degrees in as many minutes. The cloudburst began almost as soon as they left the deserted ruins of the redoubt, a cold, driving, penetrating downpour that slanted in from the north. A dank mist appeared, clinging to the upper branches of the enormous trees, so that the skyscraping tops became totally enveloped in gray-white. By the time they caught the scent of the cooking fires of Hopeville, Ryan and the others were completely soaked through to the skin. They found that Doc was fast asleep. Sister Helen was sitting upright but dozing by a smoldering pile of embers. Her breath smelled of whiskey. She woke with a start as they came dripping in.
Oh, old gentleman's been a tad poorly. Slept some after he'd taken a nip of something to fight the fever off from him.
Mildred, more concerned for Doc than her own wet discomfort, leaned over him, laying a hand on his forehead.
He's burning up. It's not the kind of fever to take you up the hill on a death cart, but it's enough to make you feel pretty damn rough.
Anything you can give him? Maybe Wolf has some drugs.
I go ask. Back in a minute.
Jack slipped out into the murky cold, vanishing like a wraith in the darkening mist. Sister Helen was relieved of her sick watch and scurried out into the rain herself, while Christy piled some fresh dry kindling onto the fire, bringing it back to a healthy blaze. They all quickly peeled off their sodden clothes, drying themselves by the flames, shrouded in blankets as they stood around the fireplace. The noise and light dragged Doc back from his sleep. He sat up in bed, looking startled and surprisingly fragile.
By the three Kennedys, what malign, monkish figures are foregathered here at their vile ministering?
Only us, Doc. How goes it with you?
It passes, dear Ryan. Would there be any liquid refreshment of any sort available? My throat resembles the front garden of Death Valley. I fear that I am dry, barren, arid, parched.
Mildred poured some water from an earthenware jug into a chipped goblet of colored glass and handed it to Doc. He took several deep gulps, spilling some down his chest.
Ah, that is so much better. Thank you, madam. I confess that I feel a few notches below my usual effervescent best. Perhaps a little more rest would be of benefit.
Ryan was checking his blaster, sitting cross-legged on his bed. Jack reappeared in the doorway, empty-handed. Ryan gave him an expectant look, but the teenager shook his head, the strands of snowy hair clinging limply to his etched cheeks.
No medicine. Found Wolf in a big house. I think drunk. Eyes like poached eggs, red cheeks. Said he regretted that Bill didn't have medical skills or drugs. Hope Doc got better quick. He'll be ready for testing tomorrow.
Yeah, I haven't forgotten. Fire blast. Surely they won't expect a sick old man to take part in this testing.
Jack huddled under a mottled gray blanket while he shook off his wet clothes.
I'm afraid they will.
Maybe he'll be okay by then and be able to take part.
Doubt he'll be in much shape to take part in anything for a couple of days. The Children of the Rock can't be that insensitive, can they?
None of the others answered her. The moment of uncomfortable silence was blessedly broken. Supper had arrived. It was delivered to them by a brace of the younger women, one of whom had a vile cancer disfiguring her face. A rotting hole of fringed flesh, where what remained of her nose joined her mouth. The upper lip was already consumed, showing the line of her rotting teeth. She tried hard to keep her head turned away from the gentle golden light of the two oil lamps that smoked on the table by the side window, concealing the worst of her hideous scarring from the Outlanders. There were bowls of thick soup, with chunks of carrot and parsnips floating in it, followed by some tough mutton chops, with whipped potatoes that had been grievously undercooked, leaving hard lumps. The bread was good, fresh-baked rolls, with a dish of salted butter. Mugs of frothing, creamy milk completed the meal.
Soup tastes bitter. I recognized some of the herbs in it, but I don't know what it is that gives it this sour aftertaste.
I don't notice it. Potatoes are lumpy enough to match this tough mutton, though. Luckily, the mustard's taking away the worst of the flavor from that.
Doc sipped at the soup, but didn't feel like facing the meat. He drank the milk and asked for more to combat the dryness of his sore throat. Within minutes, he was fast asleep again. The rest finished the meal in relative silence, reflecting on the day behind them and the day that loomed ahead. Ryan found himself nodding and shook his head in an effort to throw off his sleepiness.
I'm dropping off.
He puzzled at how his voice seemed to be coming from a vast distance away, echoing inside his skull.
We could go for a walk, lover. The fresh air would do us good. It's real muggy inside here.
Ryan opened the door of their cabin, looking out into the late evening. The rain had almost ceased, but still dripped noisily from the overhanging branches of the towering trees. The cloud cover was being lashed away in the rising wind, showing an occasional glimpse of a sliver of moonlight. No signs of life were visible outside the buildings of Hopeville, though all the huts showed lights through the slitted shutters. Christy rose and joined Ryan, her warm body pressed against his. Ryan glanced behind them. Doc's mouth gaped open as he snored. Dean and Jack were lying on their beds, fully dressed again, as they all were. The youth's eyes were closed tight, and their chests were moving rhythmically. JB and Mildred were locked in each other's arms on a double bed that they'd contrived by pushing two of the singles together. They also looked like they were asleep.
You were right about that bitterness in the soup. Not flavor. And it keeps repeating on me.
He had remembered something that really mattered, but he couldn't now recall what it had been.
What was it?
What? I didn't hear you, lover.
Ryan steadied himself on the frame of the door, feeling the roughness of the hewed wood.
I didn't hear you, lover.
You said that before.
Did I?
We going for that walk?
A flurry of rain dashed into Ryan's face, making him blink. For a moment, he was worried. Something was definitely wrong. He shouldn't be feeling this tired. Christy hadn't answered him, leaning more heavily on his arm, making him reach around to support her slumped dead weight. The odd, cold realization that she had fallen asleep, standing up, finally registered. That wasn't right either.
Christy?
Ryan had the strange, familiar hunter suspicion that someone was watching him from the pools of the dark shadow around the bill. It had gone very still. And then he was lying on the bed, one arm jammed underneath him. Ryan squinted from his good eye, seeing that Christy lay on the bed at his side, her bright hair illuminated by the flickering flames of the fire. A pulse pounded in his temple like a deadening hammer blow. With an enormous effort, he turned his head, seeing that the door of the hut stood wide open.
The door shouldn't be open at night. It should be locked and barred. Bolted.
His tongue felt swollen, and it filled his mouth.
I should swing these legs over the side of this bed and get up and push that door closed and slide the bolt shut. But I don't know how to do that right now. That just might be impossible right now. That is just so far beyond the realm of possibility. Hey, there isn't a bolt on that door. Funny, I never noticed that before. Anyone could just walk right in. Oh, it's bitter. That odd flavor of the soup. Odd flavor. Odd.
Ryan closed his eye. Ryan was the chaser. He pursued a nameless, faceless creature along the slippery corridors. Damp streamed down the rough-hewed walls of what seemed like an ancient mine. He was wounded. In the biting chill of the caves, Ryan could feel an ominous warmth clotted around his groin and lower stomach. He touched himself, reaching inside the coat. His fingertips, numb with cold, touched hot stickiness. There wasn't much pain, but a throbbing, pounding feeling lanced across his temples, and a sick dizziness. Two or three times, Ryan felt that he was going to lose his balance and fall in the slimy passages. But if he fell, then his prey would escape him. Or he would find that he had suddenly, inexplicably, become the prey himself. The shafts kept forking and dividing, yet he somehow always knew which trail to follow. Onward and downward, once having to use the rotting length of braided rope that clung to the one wall like a handrail. His hand gripped what he had thought was his Sig Sauer pistol, but a feeble, guttering lamp had revealed that the blaster in his right fist was really only a single-shot bolt-action .22. It was a chipmunk silhouette, a heavy, long-barreled pistol, almost unique in the bolt-action for a hand blaster. It wasn't the kind of weapon that Ryan had ever carried before. Hardly the sort of man-stopper that he needed for this subterranean chase. A black plastic box was hooked to the wall just ahead of him.
You have 4 minutes and 30 seconds to complete the task.
Ryan stopped and doubled over, being violently sick, his mouth flooding with a bitter taste of golden bile. He dropped to his hands and knees, pressing his forehead to the seeping walls of the corridor. It felt like someone had a fist knotted down on the sole of his guts, tugging and twining, trying to rip out the greasy loops of intestines. Ryan felt warm tears streaming down his stubbled cheeks, leaking under the eye patch, with salt stinging his skin. For a moment he stopped, battling the sickness. He paused in the dark stillness, waiting for his prey to give him some clue where it was lurking. But there was nothing. The blackness was filled with complex, shifting shapes. It was like being locked into the heart of a huge puzzle that had a simple solution. Once he had found the missing shapes, or were they symbols, and slipped them into the correct places in the puzzle, then everything would be all right. There was a bitter anger in Ryan's heart that threatened to become a scarlet mist that would shroud his brain and imperil all sense of balance and harmony.
Fire blast.
Things were getting worse. The sickness and dizziness pressed down on the unprotected surface of his brain. Blood trickled down his thighs, into his combat boots, an icy feeling that seemed to be spreading from the gaping wound in his stomach. The floor dipped suddenly, and Ryan dropped, a jolting fall that felt like 50 feet. But common sense told him that it was probably no more than 8 or 10 feet. It was hard enough for him to lose his balance and to bang his elbow, a painful bone-scraping blow that triggered the reflexes in his fingers. They opened, and the unusual blaster spun away out of his grip. Ryan stayed where he was, crouched on hands and knees, slowly recovering from the shock of the fall. He reached out around him on the wet granite for the blaster, but it had totally disappeared in the blackness. Shakily, Ryan stood. He felt for the walls, finding one, then 4 or 5 paces off, the other one. Both were hacked from stone, both streaming from meltwater, as cold as whispered sin. Cautiously, he reached up into the singing space above his head, but there was no roof to be felt. He knew that he could never climb back up to the previous level, which meant that there was only one way to go, and that was onward. But now he was weaponless, and the tumble had stretched the torn lips of his gashed belly. The blood was flowing more quickly, and he had no way of checking it. You couldn't put a tourniquet on your own stomach.
Lonesome. Low down.
He wished that Christie were with him in the catacomb. The traitor always used to say that in a tight spot, 2 were 10 times as good as 1. Ryan blinked again, reaching to rub at his good eye. He pressed hard with his palm, expecting to see a dazzling array of silver and gold sparks flashing across the retina. But there was nothing. No reaction. Just blackness. It felt like he was losing it. His senses were betraying him. Now the pain in his stomach was burning hot. The steady dribble of blood from the wound was bitterly cold, making it difficult for him to lift and lower his feet. But when he did, it was like walking across an infinite pavement of human eyeballs that squished and rolled under the soles of his boots, making him lose his balance. When Ryan brushed against the invisible wall, it wasn't hard stone like it had been before. Now it was just like plunging his fingers into the rotting body of a flayed corpse. He had the horrible sensation of hundreds of blind maggots writhing in both hands. The word sounded so very far away. The dizziness swept over Ryan like a great wave of nausea, bringing him again to his knees.
Come on, Ryan.
Ryan Carter?
Ryan's mouth was dust dry, and when he tried to speak, there was no sound. A single word pounded in Ryan's brain, like the beating of a slack-skinned drum heard shimmering through the heat haze of a luxurious summer meadow.
Carter!
Ryan was going to have to open his eye again, which didn't seem like the best idea in the world. It would be uncomfortable and painful. Better by far to sleep and die.
Give. Drink.
Cool liquid flowed into Ryan's mouth, over his swollen tongue, and into his parched throat.
Good.
What did he say?
Said it was good, brother. Shall I give him more?
No. Sit him up. Slap his face if he won't come around. I need him awake.
A blow jolted Ryan's cheek, making the vertigo worse.
Open your eye, Carter.
Soon.
Not soon. Now.
Others are coming around, except that old man and the albino kid. Both flaked out.
Kid had 2 helpings of the soup, and the old-timers got Sierra flu. Drug was bound to work harder on him than on the others.
Ryan knew that this was something important, and something that somehow he already knew.
Had odd flavor.
Bet it did, Brother Carter, but not enough to stop you pigging out on it.
Drugged.
That was it. That was the missing shape in the puzzle.
Did he say something about the soup being drugged?
Ryan felt his whole body moving, as though someone were rocking the bed he lay on.
Drug me.
Right. Now it's time you got yourself up and walking good, Brother Carter.
Ryan recognized the voice now. He took a deep breath, allowing his right hand to wander under a pillow beneath his head, feeling for the familiar butt of the Sig Sauer, ready to wipe away the smiles and laughter.
Don't think so, Outlander.
We've waited enough. Open your eye and get up. There's much to talk about before you and your colleagues entertain us at the testing.
Ryan opened his eye, feeling an instant tsunami of sickness washing around his skull. All he knew was that they'd been tricked by the Children of the Rock. All of their weapons had been stolen, and there was this repeated talk of the testing. It was time to fight back against the drugs they'd been given. But there was an instant that seemed suspended, that encompassed much time and movement in one moment. The voices disappeared in that instant. The room swam into focus. And he was somehow sitting cross-legged on his own bed, holding his aching head in his hands.
Ah.
Sunlight shone through the narrow gap where the door of their hut stood ajar. The air was heavily scented with the fragrance of the surrounding pines, freshened by the heavy rain of the previous night. To his right, Christy was also sitting up, her hands laid flat on her thighs. Her emerald eyes were closed, and her sentient red hair was coiled protectively about her nape. She was meditating, calling silently on the powers of the Earth Mother to help them out of this deep, deep hole. J.B. stood, looking out the window of the cabin, Mildred at his side, running her fingers through her beaded hair. Neither of them had spoken much in the past hour or so, locked into their own thoughts. Ryan noticed that Mildred was holding J.B.'s hand. Jack rested on the floor in a corner of the room, staring at the hewed logs of the wall. Dean sat on his bed, quietly staring at the ceiling, completely still. Doc lay on his back, blankets pulled up to his stubbled chin, his eyes closed. From where he was sitting, Ryan could make out the sheen of perspiration that dappled the old man's pallid forehead. Remembering the Sig Sauer, he checked under his pillow. What he had experienced was real. It was gone. And he suspected it would be the same with all the weapons in the hut.
They get all your knives, Jack?
Some. Not all.
Well, that's something.
Doc's Lama is gone as well. And his sword.
Why the fuck they done this to us? All fucking words, friendly shit. What's the game?
A shadow filled the doorway, and Ryan turned his head toward it.
No game? Oh my, not at all a game. We are being careful, young man. You know, Brother Carter, I learned from your wonderful and wise trader that a man who takes a chance that he doesn't have to take doesn't often live long enough to take any further chances. Well, something a lot like that, anyway.
What's the danger? If we wanted to cause you trouble, then we could have done that from line one, page one. We had all the firepower we needed. Like Jack says, all your words were just a load of bullshit.
Possible.
Probable.
Patience and forgiveness are great virtues, Brother Ryan.
You drugged us and stole our weapons.
But of course. Did you believe it was the fairies and elves of the great trees that had crept in while you slumbered and took your blasters? Goblins and gnomes of the high mountains? No, I rather think not, brother.
Ryan got up off the bed, managing to conceal his dizziness.
Cut the crap. What about the testing you talked about? That's still on?
Owsley appeared in the doorway at Wolf's elbow, smiling obnoxiously.
Of course it's on, Outlander. That's just what all this is about.
Drug us and take our weapons? Why not just chill us all?
That is not the way of our Lord, the military fundamentalist. We have simply taken precautions, made sure the testing will go well and fairly.
Fairly? Not a word I'd link to you, Brother Wolf.
Then you would be wrong, Brother Carter. Hopeville is built upon the strong foundation of fairness. Isn't that right, sister?
A third figure appeared outside the doorway now, the large woman they had spied in the church.
Hallelujah, brothers and sisters.
Christy looked across at the woman and was surprised at the glance of bitter hatred that she received in turn.
It's midday, Brother Carter, a time for all to eat at God's own table, a time to remember things past and to look forward to things that are soon to come. Let us go dine.
Doc was still very unwell, with a scorchingly high temperature. and Mildred insisted that the old man had to stay warm and snug in his bed, with plenty to drink to fight off the real dangers of dehydration. Wolf agreed, and turning on his heel, led the other two away from the hut. As soon as they were gone, Ryan shut the door, and a short but bitter conversation ensued.
I say we cut our losses and run for it.
Leave the blasters?
Why not? Dark night, Ryan. We can always replace the weapons. But I'm real triple unhappy about the setup here.
I'm not delighted with it, friend. I'm not exactly comfortable when anyone takes away my blasters. But it seems best to just go along with the flow for now.
I'm with JB. We can jump a guard or two, grab their blasters, try and retrieve our own weapons and blades, and be out of here. All in 10 minutes flat.
Less.
No, you haven't thought it through, either one of you. Close on 100 souls here in Hopeville. All the men are bristling with blasters, thicker than fleas on the back of a hog. There's no chance.
But it could be a trick.
They had us all out cold, drugged and helpless. All they did was take our weapons off us. It would have been child's play to butcher us there and then. One dull-edged knife and 7 slit throats, if that was what they wanted to do. I don't see that as Wolf's plan. But if anyone else has a different view on this, let's hear it. Christy, you got any sort of a feeling about what's going down?
Not really, Lover, but I can't say I like it.
I don't bastard like it either. Thought I'd said that. I feel like I'm talking to my fucking self. You have to look at the way the dice lie.
The dice die. Fly like a flea. Oh, flee like a fly. If I fly like a flea, then you won't catch me.
Doc's delirious words hung silent in the room. There was nothing else to be said. They all agreed to go for the meal and the testing and give it their best shot, and then see that evening how things looked. Still uneasy from their angry conversation, the companions joined the throng outside for the noontime meal.